If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the man who never takes an off week, the man who's always here in spite of rain, shine or snow. It's Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, Kenny. Yeah, it's been a bit of a tough week due to the events that I discussed in last week's podcast. So yeah, I'm holding up all right. Under the circumstances. How are you doing, Kenny?
I'm good, but I mean, here was me thinking that because of your circumstances, you might take a week off and I could keep some money. But no, you're still here every week. So, anyway, well, no pints
us,
for me.
Hey, Kenny, us self-employed people, you know?
I know, you don't get holiday pay.
Exactly.
Lots to discuss this week. We're going to cover a little bit of Pedro Morales later on. We're going to talk about Raw and SmackDown. On the overrun, we're going to do a few listener questions. But I guess to kick off, AEW put tickets on sale for Double or Nothing. They've sold out immediately. They sold out most of the tickets in the pre-sale. They sold out the remaining tickets on the general sale within 4 minutes. So the entire MGM Grand Arena has been sold out. Are you surprised? Did you think it was going to sell out this quickly? And what kind of sign is this for AEW going forward? It can't be anything but good, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's a really good sign. I mean, I thought it would do well because when you look at, I mean, if you go back and look at All In, there wasn't this level of promotion for All In, was there? I mean, it's very different the whole way that that was presented. Whereas with All Elite Wrestling and their first official show, there's been this strategy, this, you know, process of getting the word out there, drip feeding information about what's going to be taking place on the show, who's going to be on the show. And it's all been very well managed, I feel. I mean, the proof, of course, is in the rate at which the tickets have sold out the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Vegas. So I thought it would do well. And I think the show after this will be a very quick sellout as well. It's all sort of long-term, where will they be in 6 months' time when they're running regular shows, which presumably they will be doing. That will be the real test. But as of right now, it's, you know, all looking fabulous for All Elite Wrestling.
So the card so far, Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho is the main event, obviously. A pretty big main event for the first show.
I would agree.
The rematch of Wrestle Kingdom. And then the other one of the other big matches is Hangman Page against Pac, which, you know, it's interesting that Pac has come in and he's only made this, you know, the one appearance in person, the one appearance via video, and already he feels like a major player. Whereas in WWE, obviously, he was a little bit stifled by being in the cruiserweight division where there, you know, not a lot of people watched it. I think Pac's probably going to be one of the kind of standout people in AEW.
Yeah, I think so. I think something needs to be said as well about AEW not overexposing its talent. You know, we've said this many times before about WWE that, you know, sometimes less is more. And that when they do promotion for shows, if they actually did less promotion, it would be more effective because sometimes they sort of run out of things to do to promote a show. If you look at the way that they promoted this, it's just been like Twitter stuff, it's been YouTube videos, it's been press conferences with sort of mini brawls there. So it's all been very sparing as the hype for it, which in many ways makes you more eager to watch the show because you haven't seen these guys have matches or do like big angles or promos. You've got to be there to see them.
Yeah, 100%. And then we've also got the tease of the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers, which should just be a great match because the Lucha Brothers are insanely good and the Young Bucks are very popular with their kind of... how would you describe the Young Bucks' style? Is it kind of throwback, nostalgia, high spot style, or how would you describe it?
I don't know, really. I mean, it's obviously very high spot based. I mean, they've got lots of signature moves. I think they will mesh very well with the Lucha Dragons. Sorry, not the Lucha Dragons.
Don't bring those fuckers into it.
Sorry, Pentagon, Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix. Sorry about that.
No offence to comparing them to fucking Sin Cara. I'm totally keeping that in, though. There's no way you're getting away with that one. The Lucha Brothers.
I think they probably have a good match with those guys as well.
Sorry,
the Lucha Brothers, yeah. I think they will have a really good match with them because, I mean, you know, they had so many good matches. I mean, look at that match they had on Homecoming. Tremendous match last year at Slammiversary. Obviously, both Impact Wrestling events. And I think these guys will do things we've never seen before. They're very inventive. You can see they've got tremendous pride in the work. And it's their goal each time to steal the show. So I don't know whether they will steal the show, but I think they'll give it a damn good go. So I think that will be. I'm sure it won't be like what happened at All In, where they ran out of time. Or at least I hope it's not going to be like that. Hope the show goes on like middle of the card, and they have enough time to do their thing. And I think their thing will be well worth watching.
We also got SoCal Uncensored, Kazarian, Daniels and Scorpio Sky against three of the OWE guys from China. Like Chima's one of them that's been announced, that should still be announced. And then we've also got Dr. Britt Baker, Nyla Rose and Kylie Rae in a triple threat match. Which is, you know, I mean, this is the first time an American wrestling promotion has openly got a trans wrestler there.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I think the test is going to... I've never seen Nyla Rose perform, but I think the test is going to be... Does she have a good enough match to merit being in that spot? Or because, you know, that's the fear is you don't want it to just be a sort of they're there for the sake of being there. You want it to be there because they've got the merit of being a good performer. So, I mean, I doubt they would bring somebody in who's not going to be up to snuff. So the card so far looks pretty decent. And, you know, like we said, Aja Kong is going to be there. So hopefully she will murder somebody. At some point.
No, not literally.
No, not literally, but a figurative murder.
Yes.
We
believe Cody Rhodes is going to be... He had knee surgery this week, didn't he?
He had knee surgery on Tuesday, so he will be recovered in time. He will be wrestling at the show. He said that there's a couple of people that are in line to be his opponent. I don't really know who his opponent is going to be, so it'll be quite interesting to see what direction they go.
I mean, that's not... It's not really that important, because this is... It's not like this is just a... Like it wasn't like All In where we were seen at first as a one-off show, so everyone needed a role. We know this is part of a long-term plan and a series of shows and a regular full-time promotion. So if there is no big match for him, then you know maybe they could hold him off until the following show. I mean, it's not imperative that he wrestles on the show, is it, really? He'll be there, of course, but he doesn't have to wrestle if the show is strong enough without him.
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if he didn't. I just feel like he's going to want to be there and be a part of it. And I'm intrigued as to who his opponent's going to be. Because for somebody like Cody, it's going to have to be a relatively big match on the show. Because he's one of the main stars, so I guess we will see. I also wanted to briefly touch on you'd mentioned this on a Facebook post. Jay White, the Switchblade, is the new IWGP champion in New Japan. Would you for somebody like me, or I guess some listeners who aren't familiar with New Japan, what is Jay White as champion? Is that a good decision? Is it a controversial decision? And what do you think it means for New Japan going forward?
I mean, it's a bold move by New Japan. So, I mean, he obviously beat Okada at the Dome and then was announced as Tanahashi's challenger at the New Beginning show. I can't say I'm hugely surprised by the result, because it feels to me like New Japan... I mean, if you go back to 2012, they made Okada champion. He defeated Tanahashi and people were like astounded that Okada, this guy who'd been treated like a jobber by TNA and had really not done a whole lot in the business by that point, People were astounded that this guy became champion, and it ended up being a monumental success for New Japan, obviously. But it was seen as a really bold move at the time. Quite a few commentators were like, well, is this guy really prepared for this spot? Because it's a lot of pressure. You know, you've got to deliver the big matches. This is, you know, huge, huge thing. And will he fall to pieces under the spotlight? Obviously, he didn't. Jay White is better established now than Okada was in, I believe it was February 12th, 2012, I believe was the date. But it was sometime in February 2012. I think that's correct. So Jay White is better established now than Okada was then. So in a sense, it seems like less of a risk to make him champion. I can't say I was, you know, I was expecting the result. And the idea is that Jay White will become another Okada and that he will absolutely step up and become a better performer and a bigger star, which I think he will. And obviously he can have a rematch with Tanahashi. Okada, because White defeated him at the Dome, they can have a feud, and I'm sure they will do at some point later this year. So I think it's the right move for New Japan at this time. I think they had to do something significant after losing the members of the Elite. So, you know, this was it. It was a big move for New Japan, but I think it's a move that people will look back on as the right move at the right time.
So, I mean, I guess with the MSG show for ROH New Japan, the rumored main event is going to be Jay White and Okada. Do you think for New Japan trying to break into the States, is it important for them to have some sort of big names to draw in other people to watch the show, or do you think they can, because it's sold out, they can essentially just do a purely New Japan show? I mean, what do they need to do with the show to help their expansion? Because this is pretty much the best opportunity you're going to get with a sold-out Madison Square Garden show in WrestleMania weekend.
I'm not really sure how to answer that question. I mean, when the event is already sold out, I mean, it'll be transmitted on New Japan World. Are they going to put it on pay-per-view? I don't think they are they?
I don't think so. But the interesting thing is they kind of sold it out kind of based on the Elite guys. Initially.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's well, they didn't, but I think that was the expectation, wasn't it? I don't think at any point they at no point were ever advertised for this show, so they can't be accused of that. But you're right. I think most people who purchased tickets were under the impression that the members of the Elite would be wrestling on that card. I think that's a fair evaluation.
You see, I can't find it online, but I'm positive that initially when they had announced the show, that there was a graphic that had Cody in the Box on it.
Oh, right, possibly.
Now, I've not been able to find it, so maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to set it in stone, but I would imagine that most people thought they were going to be part of it. But what's interesting is if you look at the secondary market prices, the sort of second, you know, like StubHub and stuff. Usually that's a barometer of how popular a card is. So like, remember the NXT takeover in Dallas?
Yeah.
Where Nakamura debuted and all that kind of stuff. The secondary rate for a ticket to that show was $200. And that was 2 years ago. So this year, NXT takeover, the secondary market cheapest ticket is $165. I think Raw's $75, SmackDown's $30, but New Japan ROH is $50. Which says that it's not that high a demand ticket. So I'm curious as to how it goes, because the I mean, like I'm obviously not a complete New Japan fan, so I'm not the base of what they're looking for. But I'm thinking if they're trying to expand in the US, you would imagine that they would go a little bit out of the norm to try and pull people in.
Yeah, I mean the problem they've got is that who is available. And they've got to, whoever they bring in, it's sort of got to be in keeping with the, you know, the New Japan and the Ring of Honor spirit. It's got to be in keeping with the type of product that they promote, one would imagine. If they're bringing in like special guests who have got nothing to do with Ring of Honor and nothing to do in New Japan, then you kind of ask the question, why are they here? Why do they need to be on the show, especially when it's already sold out? So I think it's difficult, really, because most, in fact, lots of the big names are under contract to other promotions. So I'm not quite sure who they're going to bring in. And if you spend a load of money on somebody male or female wrestler, and bring them in just for the sake of a surprise pop, is that really good business? Because chances are they won't be there for the next show. You see what I mean, Kenny? What is the point of spending a load of money on somebody when you've already sold the venue out? There really isn't any, it doesn't make any sense to me from a business standpoint to do that.
I mean, I guess we'll see how, is Jay White going to be the next Okada or is he not? That's going to be the test to see how he does.
I mean, I think Jay White versus Okada is the best main event that they could present for that show. I mean, the IWGP heavyweight title has to be defended in the main event. And I think those two will have an outstanding match. We'll see if there's a doubt change. We'll find out on the night. But I think that's the best match they could present for that audience. And if the match delivers, which I absolutely believe it will, then I think the show will be remembered as a huge success.
So before we move on to Raw and SmackDown from this week, I did want to quickly give a few stats to... Have you been following your Impact Wrestling recently?
I'm probably a couple of weeks behind. Why? What statistics are you going to share with us, Kenny?
So we've got the viewing figures for the first episode of Impact on Pursuit.
Okay.
The first episode on Pursuit did 12,250 viewers. And then on Twitch, it also did between 7,000 and 11,000 viewers.
Wow.
So we're talking about 20,000 viewers is what they're getting now. So, I mean, do you think, you watch it more than me, is it something where they kind of had to do this and hopefully they can grow it? Or do you think that, is that just kind of, that's what it's going to be? It's just going to be this very niche thing now?
I mean, you would hope that it's going to grow, but... I mean, that's a niche thing, isn't it? Those figures are really low, like really low. I mean, they're in deep trouble. You said a few weeks ago that you couldn't envisage how Impact Wrestling would be in business at the end of 2019. And when you tell me those figures, it's hard to see how this is sustainable at this level. I just don't see how it is. How are they going to retain talent? I have no idea how they're going to do it. There's no money. Where's the money coming from? They're in a tough spot right now, really difficult spot. How do you grow from there? I'm not quite sure how you can do that.
It'll be interesting to see how they go. I mean, because who's the champion in Impact right now?
Well, I'm a couple of weeks behind, but it was Johnny Impact last time I checked.
So yeah, it probably still is. I can't imagine they would have changed the title on TV. But yeah, I mean, there's the odd person that still says it's a good show, but I mean, 20,000 viewers. Because what were they on the last weekends of, what was the last channel they were on, Pop TV?
Yeah, I think they were still doing six figures, weren't they, some weeks?
Yeah, they're doing about 120,000, 110,000.
Yeah, about that. So, I mean, we're talking like, that's about a sixth of the viewership. I mean, I know the Pursuit channel is in considerably fewer homes, but I think you said, was it about 30 million plus homes are in still Pursuit Channel?
About 30 million homes, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a dreadful rating based on an audience of 30 million homes. I mean, it really is. I mean, that's piss poor. So, I mean, I suppose people will find them in time. I don't know. I mean, they're in a tough spot. With All Elite Wrestling signing up so many performers, WWE being very aggressive with its signing strategy right now. It's just signing so much talent right now to prevent other companies from signing it and also just to facilitate its expansion into various territories.
You've got ROH who are also trying to stay afloat. You've got MLW who are doing some stuff. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that Impact Wrestling's the pay has gone right down, which it's going to have to do because the money just isn't there to pay people handsomely anymore. So, I mean, they're in a very difficult position.
Do you think eventually they just sell to WWE for the library and stuff?
I mean, I think so. I mean, or sell to somebody or merge with another company. Maybe they'll do like a little invasion angle or something like that.
Well, they are doing a joint show with MLW WrestleMania Weekend.
That's right, yeah.
Obviously, they're doing the Lucha Brothers against RVD and Sabu.
Yes, we talked about this last week. So. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know WWE has the deal, doesn't it, with Impact, because they use some footage, notably in the new Nigel McGuinness documentary. There was some Impact footage.
Yeah, they use some in the Hardys documentary as well.
Yeah. So
there is some sort of deal there where they use footage. So.
So, I mean, if Impact Wrestling is ceasing to operate, then you would imagine that WWE would be their first port of call. Do you want to purchase the video library? You know, which is going to be vast, and it's something that will be worth quite a lot of money, I would have thought. But it's hard to see how Impact can sustain this with the, you know, at that level, with so little talent, with so little revenue streams. I mean, there's just so little money coming in. And there's options right now for talents, like as we saw with Phoenix and Pentagon Jr. Appearing at the AEW event in Las Vegas. I mean, they're going to go where the money is. That's what wrestlers do. It's what they've always done. It's not, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, that's what they do, and that's what they're always going to do. So, yeah, Impact's in a lot of trouble right now, sadly.
So there's another story before we got into Raw and SmackDown. Batista apparently met with WWE on the 7th of February to discuss a potential WrestleMania match, but then on the 12th of February earlier on this week, he had dinner with Chris Jericho, which has led to speculation that AEW are going to want to try and get Batista for a match. What do you think he's going to do? Do you think he's going to go and have the match with Triple H that he's wanted for years, or do you think Jericho and co. can talk him round into doing something else?
I don't think he's got any interest in making a comeback beyond this one last match and this farewell match with Triple H that, as you said, he's been talking about for years now. I think that's where he wants to end his career. Because, you know, despite the fallings out between Batista and some people in WWE over the last few years, he still, I think, has tremendous gratitude to the company for enabling him to become a star, or making him a star, however you want to phrase it. And obviously, his stardom in WWE has enabled him to have this very prosperous career as an actor. I mean, he'll be part of the new... do you think he probably won't be in the Captain Marvel movie, but I'm sure he'll be in the new Avengers movie. So, I mean, he's in a great position right now as far as his career goes. So I think he would really rather conclude his career in WWE. I would see that as him saying, well, that's the natural way for me to go out in the match with Triple H, because there's a story they can tell. I mean, he started with that story, didn't they? SmackDown 1000 in, was it October or November? When was it? October, November time?
Yeah, it was October, November.
Yeah, and I mean, that went down a storm, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was a real subtle thing that they did. And you're like, wow, that's a match. That's a match that I didn't really think that I was that bothered about. But now I actually do quite fancy watching it. And that's when you know wrestling's got it right. When they can convince you that, yes, you need to see this match that you previously didn't really care about. That's when the creative team are firing on all cylinders.
So we're going to move on to Raw and SmackDown. But the other thing I wanted to ask you before we talk about Raw and SmackDown is Asuka, who has been a big topic of discussion online and in the news. She's not been on TV since the Royal Rumble, when she tapped out Becky Lynch. WrestleVotes on Twitter, who are known for breaking some stories, they had tweeted out yesterday about Asuka, because apparently they had a lot of questions. So they said, been getting a ton of Asuka questions. As far as I know, they do have a plan for Mania. It just wasn't wise for Asuka to be featured the last few weeks. WWE doesn't want excessive brand jumping prior to WrestleMania, leaving only Lana or Zelina Vega for the Chamber. That's not a pay-per-view match that WWE wanted. What do you think of the idea of not putting Asuka on TV if they don't have something for her until after the Chamber? And if she's not having the match with Charlotte, where would you like to see her positioned at WrestleMania? Because she's someone that a lot of people are curious to see what she's going to do.
It's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, we talked about this a little bit last week. I said she was the odd woman out, which I think was a fair assessment of her current position. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, we've got Charlotte, we've got Becky Lynch, we've got Ronda Rousey, and we've got Asuka. And then there's like a huge gulf between the next group of of female talent, isn't it? In terms of ability, and more importantly, star power or star status. So who is there that she could wrestle from that next bracket down from the top level?
It feels like it has to be either be somebody from Raw or somebody from NXT. Like, it can't be Naomi, Carmella, Sonya, Mandy, or the Iconics.
No, it can't, because that's not WrestleMania worthy. That would be pre-show and it'd get, 2 minutes? I mean, the entrances would take longer than the match. It's got to be somebody that they're bringing in a special for this match, and maybe someone from NXT. But I can't really... I mean, who is there in NXT? I mean, there's Shayna Baszler, but that would be to waste Shayna Baszler, and she's NXT Women's Champion. So how do you arrive at that match? You can't really. Who else is there on NXT that you could transplant to the main roster from a match that's WrestleMania worthy? I can't really think of anyone off the top of my head. Rhea Ripley, maybe. I know she's a talent and everything, but would people view her as worthy of receiving a title shot at Asuka at WrestleMania? And that's, and I'm not sure if they would.
And then, I mean, you've also got, I mean, as much as people would absolutely, there's some people would just hate it, but, you know, Nikki Bella is a name. She did have the match with Ronda at Evolution. I mean, it's not ideal, but at least it would be a match that would be on the main show, and it would be something
it would
for
be,
Asuka
yeah.
to do.
You suggested this last week, didn't you, when you read out your WrestleMania lineup? I mean, that's someone that they can insert in the storylines. People would resent Nikki Bella for swanning back in and getting the big match on the big show and the big payday. So, I mean, you've got a storyline there. I mean, we know that they like the Bellas. I understand, though, that the ratings for the Bellas TV show have hit record lows. I believe I read that this week.
Yeah, I don't know if it was their show or Total Divas. I know Total Divas has reached a lot of lows, so they've now announced new cast members, Sonya Deville, which is going to be good, because it's the first time they're going to have an openly gay character on the show. I think they're going to feature her and her girlfriend, and that's good. Ronda Rousey's going to be on the show, which I'm quite surprised at.
You're right. It was Total Divas, yeah. I mean,
why they're bringing in that star power like Ronda Rousey, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, Eel has said, listen, if you want to renew this, you've got to get the numbers back up. I think if Ronda Rousey's on it, I think it will do far better. I mean, when you think about it, the show has done very well to last as long as it has, because it's been running for years now, hasn't it? Many seasons.
It's been running for about eight seasons, something like that. So this is season nine coming up.
So, I mean, it's done very well to last as long as it has, when you think of some reality TV shows on E! Which last like one season and then disappear. I can see Nikki Bella being inserted into the WrestleMania lineup. It's going to annoy people, but probably not as much as the Nikki Bella versus Nikki Bella match from Evolution did. It's kind of a shame, really, that there's not more talent. There's not someone who's immediately obvious who could be a worthy opponent for Asuka, but there just isn't. And as to answer your question, is it a good idea to leave her off TV? I don't know, really. I mean, I think it would be nice to see her. Maybe they could even come up with some storyline where she's upset that she's not being used. Maybe just maybe they could just have her send a tweet and just say, why am I not being used? And, I mean, she could send that to Triple H or Stephanie or Vince or even Shane McMahon. I think something like that would be useful in terms of keeping her name alive. And also, if a talent is stepping up or standing up to a member of the McMahons or the WWE Royal Family, as I call them, they're immediately then viewed as a bigger star as those who aren't allowed to do that. So I think that would be quite useful to keep her name alive, at least, even if it's along the lines of, I need competition. You know, I beat Becky Lynch. You could work it into the Becky Lynch thing, where Becky Lynch is their chosen one right now, and Asuka could say, hold on a minute, last time I was featured on TV, I beat your chosen one. I haven't been used since. So I think the storyline mileage in that, which I think would also rally the fans behind her as well, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, I do remember, obviously, when I used to watch WWF as a kid, that you wouldn't have everybody on every week.
No.
Whereas now that's kind of become the norm, so you're kind of a bit worried when somebody's not on every week. But, I mean, you know, they did do the video package last week on her where she's basically beating up everybody, which, you know, I think for Asuka, it's just I think they've actually done a really good job in rehabilitating her, you know, and having her get that big win at TLC, having her tap at Becky at the Rumble. So it'd be good to see her do something, you know, at Fastlane and then at WrestleMania. So I'm just hopeful she gets on the card, and because then, you know, if you're going to go back to Becky and Asuka at some point, you really want her to have a bit of momentum.
Of course you do. I can see the position they're in, and I understand why it's happening. So, I mean, I certainly don't resent WWE for doing what it's doing. I absolutely get it. And sometimes if you do feature someone in meaningless scenarios, especially after they've scored a landmark win like Asuka did at Royal Rumble, then it kind of does devalue them and devalues the importance of the win as well.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about Raw. One of the big stories is the Revival are finally the Raw Tag Team Champions after a couple of years up on the main roster. They got the big win. They really had a great match with Gable and Roode towards the end. Really good performances. The crowd got really into it. What did you make of the Revival finally grabbing the belts?
Yeah, I enjoyed the match. What disheartened me so was the fact that there was no promos beforehand, or there was no, why didn't we have some storyline support for this match? I mean, those guys were out there putting together a match that people would have been talking about as a superb match if it had more crowd reaction. And sadly, the fans were given no reason to care about these two teams. So they were out there doing near fall after near fall with save after save. You know, all this creative stuff, some real finesse there. I thought it was a really, really strong match, but it wasn't until the very end that the fans got into it. They had to basically, they might as well have just like looked in the crowd and said, listen, looked in the crowd and said, listen, we're working really hard here. We're having a really good match. Will you give us some response, please? And then gone back to wrestling. You know, it was almost like it needed that. And I kind of felt disappointed for them. That what was a really good match and what was a historic win, as you said, for Dawson and Wilder, wasn't really greeted by the response that it merited based on how talented these teams are. Really an indictment of the creative team here. I was just saying before about how good the creative was when it came to Batista and Triple H, and this was the antithesis of that. I mean, the company just gave them nothing. So they went out there and they finally, after a Herculean effort, they made the match work. But really, really good performances from these guys. But just a shame that the company didn't play its part in the process of making people really care about what was a huge match for the Revival. And, you know, and a tag team title change is not something that you see every week, is it?
No, it's not. But I mean, everybody now that we're entering, you know, we're mid-February essentially, everybody's now looking to WrestleMania, right? Everybody's looking to see what people are going to be doing. So, I mean, I don't know if maybe it's a good idea to just merge the tag titles, because then if you merge the tag titles, the tag titles are going to mean more. Because having two of them, I just don't know. I mean, I think after somebody put a stat up that after Sunday there's going to be 10 titles in WWE on the main roster.
Yeah,
and you're not going to have every title be defended every month. It's quite hard to juggle 10 championships.
Well, it is. That is true. But WWE, going back to the point about Revival versus Roode and Gable, WWE did nothing to promote this match. You know, they're not giving these guys promo time. They're not doing angles backstage. They're not giving us a reason to care. So they can do that if they want to. You are right that the more titles there are, the less important essentially each one is. That's absolutely true. But they can do more to make each title mean more than it does. I think that's true anyway. I'm a firm believer in that. So as far as combining the two tag team titles, I'm not sure what that would really achieve. Because if the booking team isn't behind a championship, it's not really going to make a huge difference. And also, I mean, Shane and Miz have got this thing going on with the Usos, which is receiving TV time and promo time. And there was like a pretty good angle on SmackDown this week, I thought, to promote their match.
Why do you think that angle gets more TV time than the Raw one?
Oh, I wonder. I can't think why.
Is that the smell of nepotism?
Oh, yes.
I do need to give props, actually, to one of my favourites in WWE. I'd like to give a shout-out to Elias for what I thought was a beautiful guitar shot to the back to that wee prick, Kalisto. Did you enjoy that?
Oh, isn't he a member of the Lucha Brothers? Is that who you're referring to?
The Lucha isn't, Dragon isn't, Party
isn't
Brothers.
Isn't he that guy that's facing the Young Bucks?
That's him. Just a wee masked guy. But you know, I'm always a big fan of when Kalisto gets smacked in the back with a guitar. So good on Elias.
Yeah, exactly. But Kalisto showed some form there on the guitar. Got himself over.
It's nice to see him be able to do something he doesn't botch. Good for him.
If that was me out there on the guitar, I would have blown it. I can tell you that much.
You would have had more charisma in your guitar playing than Kalisto's had in his last 5 years of his career. Anyway. So, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about the main event angle in a second. Was there anything else on Raw before we talk about the big storyline angle and the end of the show that you want to talk about?
Huge news, Kenny. Tamina Snuka was allowed to speak.
It is a rarity. I mean, you understand why you'd be a bit trepidatious given, you know, her lineage of what she's going to say.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I thought actually she came across quite well. I thought her and Nia, they're a formidable team, I think. I think this is probably good for those two. So, because I've mentioned a few times that Tamina Snuka never gets to speak, and she actually did this week. So I was glad to hear that. I'm not really sure if there's anything else on the show. Which are the large stories that you're going to mention, Kenny? And if there's anything that I feel like I need to mention, I'll tack it on the end of the big stories.
Okay, so obviously the big angle on Raw was Triple H and Stephanie coming out at the beginning. They bring out Becky Lynch. Basically, they apologise to Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch says she doesn't trust them. The McMahons have been screwing people over for years. And they basically tell her she's got her WrestleMania main event. All she has to do is apologise to them and, you know, she's got her match. So she goes away to think about it. Throughout the night, she talks to Finn Balor and Ronda Rousey and Alexa Bliss, who are all giving her various pieces of advice on whether she should do it or not.
I think, didn't Charlie Caruso say, listen, Becky, you need to do this, otherwise you could end up having to wrestle in Blackpool for a living.
I think that was the WWE.com exclusive. Did you see that, I don't know if I told you, so, you know, I'd put the tweet out about, you know, I wonder if Charlie Caruso realises how much we love that segment. And about a day later, she liked the tweet. So
fantastic.
So Charlie gets it. We're all aboard the Charlie train.
We're big fans. We're all big fans.
Yeah, 100%. I want to see her in every UK show. Like, seeing her trying to give, like, the best facts about Plymouth and stuff. Like, I want to see her all across the UK. the main event segment comes. Becky comes out. She ends up apologising to Triple H and Stephanie. She says, you know, if that's what it's going to take for me to get my main event, I'm sorry. And then they go, congratulations. They go to leave. Ronda comes out. She's staring off against Stephanie. Against Becky. And then Vince McMahon comes out and says that, you know, he doesn't like Becky's attitude, he doesn't like Ronda's attitude. She's not the man, he's the man. The man has to make tough decisions, and this one is tough. He is suspending Becky for 60 days, which takes us through to 5 days after WrestleMania, and he needs a replacement for her. Someone with charisma, someone who knows her lane and stays in it. Charlotte Flair. Charlotte comes out looking like the smuggest of pricks. She is now facing Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. Vince raises her hand saying this is what we're going to see at WrestleMania. Becky's pissed. Ronda's pissed. We go off the air. Now, lots of people love this angle. Lots of people didn't like it. Where do you stand on it, Finn?
I mean, the thing is, it's based on Steve Austin versus McMahon, isn't it? I mean, the idea is that Becky Lynch will find a way to overcome. That's exactly what will happen here. So if you look at it, I mean, that is the only outcome here. Becky Lynch will, of course, be involved in the match at WrestleMania. So it's more what's the journey going to be? How is she going to do it? I mean, it's hard to imagine in the current PG era, Becky Lynch kidnapping Vince McMahon, you know, like Steve Austin did, of course, back in 1998. It's kind of hard to work out how this is going to play out, but I hope they've got a plan. Now, if the plan is good, then this storyline is going to work very well. If the plan isn't, then it feels like something that may devalue Becky Lynch. I thought the way it was presented on Raw really, it didn't enhance Becky Lynch at all. I thought it was something that's really put her in a, obviously she's in a predicament right now. And she feels like she's not the star that she was when Raw began because she's in a bind. But if she can overcome it and do it in a way that's very entertaining, which I hope she does, then this can work very well. So it's, I think it's hard to really, it's hard to cast judgment on whether this is good or bad as things stand at the moment.
How do you think they did in the first night?
Well, I kind of felt like Becky Lynch came across as a bit of a brat in the opening segment. And then when she finally apologized to Triple H and Stephanie, it didn't come across as sincere. I mean, I know you could say, well, she shouldn't be coming across as sincere when she's doing an apology because that's not her character, and that's a fair point. But I thought some of the way all that played out didn't really warm me to Becky Lynch. You know, if this was Steve Austin in this position, he would have found a way to do it that was amusing. I mean, I think that's fair to say, Nick Kenny.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, I would say Steve Austin was... The thing is, there's similarities to them, there's also differences, which is the... I guess the difficulty, because the similarity is, I mean, this the end of this show felt like an end of a Raw from the Attitude Era. It felt like that kind of show. You know, you had the rug pulled out from under you, but do you think part of it's maybe that fans don't trust WWE as much now to deliver on the outcome?
Exactly, because they've let us down so many times before when it comes to long-term storylines that go week to week and build to, you know, a satisfying outcome. I think she's going to be all right. I think Becky Lynch is going to be all right. They kind of knocked her down a bit on Raw on Monday, but that's fine if they're building her back up. And if they're building her back up bigger than ever before, which means her winning the title at WrestleMania, which is the only outcome I can envisage, then it's going to be fine. And you need these storylines. You need to knock people down. You need to put them in a position from which, you know, in an insurmountable, facing insurmountable odds, in order for people to rally behind them and follow the journey. I mean, a lot of times now, people don't really have the patience for long-term storylines. They want it now. They want it immediately. And part of the, you know, WWE is partly responsible for that by not giving us long-term storylines that have satisfying outcomes. So I think the onus here right now, Kenny, is very much on WWE making this work. And they've got to really empower Becky Lynch. And she's got to find a way through this. And I'm hoping it's entertaining. And I hope she comes across as likable. And you go back and look at Austin McMahon. No matter what Austin did, there was very few times in the 1998 to 1999 period when he wasn't, obviously the kidnapping was not a likable angle at the time. People loved it. But you go back and it's a very unsettling episode of Raw if you go back and view that now. I mean, at the time, it was like people's heads were... People just couldn't quite believe what they were seeing. But most of the time, Austin came across as likable and entertaining when he found ways to thwart Vince McMahon, who, of course, his whole goal, of course, was to thwart Steve Austin, who he didn't want representing his company. So, I mean, Austin was generally likable. I didn't really think Lynch was that likable in a lot of the in parts of Raw this week. So I'm hoping that she's going to be next week and the week after and the week after that.
You know, it's funny because I remember initially in like the 97 segments that Steve Austin wasn't very likable. He was, you know, Vince McMahon, initially, if you go back to the one where Vince gets the stunner in Madison Square Garden, that Vince was looking out for him.
Yeah.
Vince was being the kind of the babyface guy who was saying, you know, we just want to protect you. And Austin just, I mean, it's a really interesting character study to watch that the Austin McMahon stuff back, because Austin basically drives McMahon to losing his mind.
Sure.
And that's kind of where it goes. But I guess that the hope now, I mean, they've got a couple of things coming up that I think, I mean, I loved the segment, I've got to say. I thought it was really well done. And I think
it's good that Charlotte's involved. I mean, some people, I think, are resenting the fact that Charlotte's in there, aren't they? Because they want this to be Lynch versus Rousey. I think that's the source of discontent from some people.
But it's also, more overcome. It's more to overcome the odds with, really.
Exactly. But I think Charlotte needs to be involved in that because what's her role otherwise? She can't have another match with Asuka.
And if she does, she's going to beat Asuka, which is not what people want.
Exactly. So I think she needs to be involved there. And that's more stacking the odds against Becky Lynch. So she played her... I thought she was great. And I thought she was even better on SmackDown.
Oh, her promo in the beginning of SmackDown was great. She owned that crowd. And there's been times before where we've seen her lose her train of thought in front of the crowd. But she owned that crowd on Tuesday.
Yeah, it was short and to the point. She got everything out there succinctly. It came across really well. She's got the heel character, the smug heel character, down to a fine art. This is the role that she was born to play, obviously. I mean, as a babyface, we saw that last year when people were booing her when she was supposed to be a babyface. This is her perfect role. I mean, it's not like a dad. Ric Flair could do babyface very well as heel. I mean, people always remember him as a heel, but he was actually a very likable babyface as well. Charlotte, I don't think, is likable as a babyface. I think she needs to be a heel or at least a tweener. And I think she's doing really well in this role. So she's like Vince's hand-picked. She is basically in the role of The Rock, you know, Vince's corporate champion. Charlotte's in the role of The Rock, you know, late 98, early 99. Early 1999, Charlotte's in that role. She's doing really well. So I think I'm hoping that this is going to cause Lynch, Becky Lynch, to step up here. And I think she's going to have to up her game.
Well, she's got, there's 2 months to WrestleMania. And it's like, as much as people, you know, Ronda and Becky would be great, but you're also, this means that you can save Ronda and Becky as one-on-one to down the line. Because if Becky ends up tapping out Charlotte at WrestleMania in the match, then Ronda's got the kind of, you never beat me. And then you still have that match to come back to.
Well, that's assuming Ronda sticks around after WrestleMania, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's going to, I think she'll be a Brock after that, which I actually don't think will be the worst thing for her. But you've got 2 months to build, so you've got to have twists and turns. And I think that I actually think the corporate Charlotte character is genius because it's so obvious, but I never thought of it. Like, she is, because then you're playing into that kind of, she's the chosen one, she always gets the opportunities, and here she is again, getting the opportunity. You know, it's been the story of her, you know, look at last summer when she inserted herself into the Carmella-Becky match at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
She's done it for ages, and now she's kind of playing up to it. And, you know, with, I think it's 2 weeks from now, Raw's in Atlanta, and it's got Ric Flair's 70th birthday bash.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think Becky Lynch is going to show up at that.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. And
but you're right; they've got to come up with engaging TV from now to WrestleMania. I think that the good thing about Charlotte being involved is it means that Ronda doesn't have to be a straight up heel, which you know she's uncomfortable with. So there's a lot of interesting dynamics.
Yeah, and Charlotte is much better on the mic than Ronda is because Ronda's fine sometimes, and other times she gets a bit carried away, and she doesn't really express herself very clearly. Whereas Charlotte has really knows, she understands the importance of timing, not speaking too quickly, you know, letting people digest what she's just said before she says the next thing. You know, all these little things that do take a while to master. Some people never master them. So I think I wasn't hugely impressed. I thought Lynch didn't come across that well at times. But I think the pieces are all laid out now for something that could be really rather good. But it's up to WWE to prove that it can still do that, you know, long-term sort of twisting, turning, episodic storytelling that actually, you know, peaks at the big show, not like a week or 2 weeks before. I'm interested to see where it goes, put it that way. I'm hoping they keep Lynch off TV at least for one more. Well, do you think she'll be at Elimination Chamber this weekend, Kenny? I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because almost in order to sell this, she sort of really does need to disappear for a little while at least. Otherwise, the suspension means nothing.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance, isn't it? Because you want to do it so it means something, then you don't want her away too long that it loses any momentum.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think the February 25th Raw where Ric Flair has his birthday thing would be a perfect way to do it. You know, just when Charlotte and Rick are having this great time and then Becky interrupts, you know, and that's where you do it. But, you know, I actually think that the idea of Vince handpicking Charlotte and doing all that, like, it is good heat, I think. It's adding to... People desperately want Becky to win, and yeah. Charlotte being added is another stumbling block put ahead of her that she's ultimately going to overcome. So as long as that's what happens, to me, it's a good story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, hopefully we'll look back on it and say, wow, that was genius.
Yeah.
And all these, you know, little things, these little sacrifices or whatever that were made, they were all worth it for the investment of this huge payoff, you know, at WrestleMania.
And look at where we were 5 months ago, where people were saying, oh, they're trying to make Becky Lynch a heel, they're not giving people what they want, and now they're going with it. So, you know, she's being featured as a main eventer, and like you say, you know, her job is now going to be to keep up that end of the bargain. From now going on. So we talked a little bit about Charlotte's promo on SmackDown. We also got a fun segment with the Usos and Shane and Miz for the tag match Elimination Chamber. I thought it was a pretty good segment.
What was that? The Usos versus Miz. Was that McMiz TV?
McMiz TV, yeah. The debut edition, Finn. You will always remember where you were when you saw the first ever McMiz TV.
Oh, yes, I will. In the same place that I always am. Sight from the computer. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was really well done. I thought the, you know, the Usos and the Miz and Shane were trying to prove who was closer to his partner than the other. So there's some good comedy there, I thought. I think the Usos were presented as the heels. They flattened Shane and Miz at the end of the segment with stereo super kicks. So I thought this was a really good segment. I think they're going to have a good match on Sunday. I'm inclined to believe, well, we were not doing any predictions now, are we, Kenny?
We're going to do the predictions in just a minute, so we'll come back to that in a minute.
I thought it was a really good segment. The Usos are a team, I think they're a team that's been in WWE for a long time, but I still feel like they've got a lot of potential to become bigger and more interesting and exciting than they are. I don't know whether you share the same view.
Yeah, no, I think the segment's really good. I think the Usos came across really well here. The Shane and Miz thing is working really well. I don't think it was going to. So, you know, I don't know whether they're able to make it go on a little bit longer. I don't know if you need to do Miz versus Shane at WrestleMania. I mean, I think they will. But, you know, I don't know if it's maybe worth keeping it going a little bit longer.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's too soon. I mean, they can do the split, but let's leave it till April or May.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they could do the split at WrestleMania. I'm not sure. On Raw the next night, when WWE traditionally draws its largest audience of the year.
Yeah, so there's options. Mustafa Ali's obviously injured, which is a shame for him. So he's going to miss the Elimination Chamber. So he was replaced in the Gauntlet match by Kofi Kingston, who had his best outing in WWE in years, where he pinned Daniel Bryan, beat Jeff Hardy, beat Samoa Joe, and ultimately, you know, lost to AJ Styles before Randy Orton came in with an RKO at the end to seal his place as the last person to come out of the chamber. What did you make of the Gauntlet match and Kofi's performance?
It was the best match on SmackDown in, I mean, it was like over an hour, wasn't it? The match lasted over an hour?
Yeah, over an hour.
I know we had a lot of ad breaks and stuff in there, but I thought it was really good. I thought Bryan was loads of fun against Kingston. I thought he did a really good job there, playing the heel and just really fleshing out his character, which is always loads of fun to watch. I really enjoyed Bryan versus Kingston. It's kind of a shame to see Jeff Hardy lose so quickly. He's really fallen from grace, I feel, over the last few months. Samoa Joe's doing well right now. Kingston obviously eliminated Joe from the match, but then Joe got his heat back by applying the choke afterwards. AJ Styles came out and says to Kingston, you don't have to do this, which was, hold on a minute, isn't this supposed to be a different AJ Styles? And he's kind of like just the same AJ Styles that we saw last year.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't really feel like AJ's character has gone anywhere since he attacked Vince McMahon. I'm still a bit perplexed as to why that happened. I've said that before. I apologize for that. I guess it kind of made sense that Styles would defeat Kingston at that point. Kingston could certainly take the loss without any harm to his reputation. This was a huge boost for him this night. I mean, Kingston was a guy who, like 10 years ago, I wasn't sure that he was going to become a top guy, but you sort of thought, well, maybe he'll have a shot. And then he had that few episodes with Randy Orton. Didn't really work out for him, did it? But we always knew that Kingston was a real good talent, and he proved it here. Really tremendous performance from him. He must have come out of this, you know, one smiling guy. And then it was funny at the end that we had Styles there. And it always, you always know it's coming, don't you, Kenny, when they do that close-up shot of a guy's head. Because, yep, you know, Randy Orton's doing the running. And you know Kevin Dunn loves that. Oh, no, get right in. So it's a big shock for the viewers. And Randy Orton comes in, hits the RKO and scores a pin. You know, Randy Orton is one of these guys that's actually far more effective used in small doses. So when he just does this move, people really like him. And I find that amuses me for some reason. But overall,
less is more with him.
Less is definitely more with Randy Orton. So I thought the match was a triumph. Yeah, really good. I know you enjoyed it, Kenny. You thought it was fabulous as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I'm really happy to see Kofi Kingston get that. And I wouldn't be adverse at some point to Kofi Kingston getting like a big solo title shot. I don't think he's a guy who would be a long-term champion, but I think that he's someone who... there's a story there to tell in some way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm slightly... I am slightly disappointed that Almas or Andrade Almas is not involved in Elimination Chamber in some way.
Yeah, you would have thought that him and Ray would have been involved. Maybe they're saving that for Fastlane.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess should we do predictions just to round it off?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so we have the Women's Tag Team Elimination Chamber match, which is also known as the Clusterfuck match, which is... Nia Jax and Tamina against Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan, against Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, against the Iconics, against Bayley and Sasha, against Naomi and Carmella. Who is your pick to walk out of the chamber with the women's tag team titles?
I'm going with Tamina Snuka and Nia Jax, which will set up the defense against Bayley and Sasha at WrestleMania. So I'm going with Nia Jax and Tamina. What do you say, Kenny?
I'm going to go with Bayley and Sasha. I think we get the big happy ending here of them winning the titles. Sasha being, you know, just cleared. I think they're going to win the titles on Sunday and maybe face Nia and Tamina at Fastlane.
Okay.
Miz and Shane defend the SmackDown Tag Team titles against the Usos.
I think Miz and Shane are going to retain. I think it's too soon for their reign to end because then that'll move us closer to those two going through a messy divorce. And we don't want that just yet. So I'm going with Shane and Miz to retain. What do you say, Kenny?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that as well. I could see maybe something that's kind of like dissension that they have or like a mix-up, but ultimately I think they'll retain the titles.
Yeah.
Buddy Murphy defends the Cruiserweight title against Akira Tozawa. I think Murphy will retain this one. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, I haven't really been paying a whole lot of attention to 205 Live, if I'm perfectly candid. But I think Murphy will retain.
Then we have a handicap match for the Intercontinental Championship. Finn Balor challenges Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush. Do you think Finn wins the IC title here, or do you think that Bobby Lashley walks away with it?
I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure why Leo Rush has been added to this match. That's what you do in the rematch. It seems too soon for Leo Rush to be involved, so I don't really understand it. And I mean, I think it's going to be Lashley and Leo Rush who will emerge victorious. Although in saying that, you know, Finn Balor lost to Brock Lesnar at Royal Rumble. I mean, he could do with a win, couldn't he? And obviously pinning Leo Rush is the easy way out on that one. So now I've thought about it for more than 10 seconds, I'm going with Finn Balor. What do you say, Kenny?
Yeah, I think Finn Balor might win the title by pinning Leo Rush, and that sets up the rematch with Lashley next month at Fastlane, when hopefully Balor gets the big win over Lashley then.
I still feel like Finn Balor should have been given a short title reign, should have beaten Brock Lesnar. I think that would have been great for him. I think it would have made Brock Lesnar more interesting. He doesn't need to be invincible anymore. I understand why they did it last year with the Roman Reigns thing, but we know that Brock Lesnar can be beaten, so the invincibility thing is not really it's not paramount like it was last year. I think if Finn Balor had won the title, setting up a rematch with Lesnar, that would have made things more interesting for Balor, more interesting for Lesnar, Heyman, more interesting for Seth Rollins, because he could have done stuff with Balor as well. I think they kind of blew it there, Kenny.
we shall see what they do with Balor on Sunday. They've got Braun Strowman and Baron Corbin in a no DQ match. I mean, this feels like it's rife for Drew McIntyre shenanigans.
It does, yeah, it does. But you've got to imagine, I mean, Braun's got to win. I mean, he needs a big win here, surely. It's got
to
be Braun.
Can't lose to Baron fucking Corbin. Surely to God.
I mean, it's got to be Braun. Braun's got to be Braun's night, but you're right, yeah, maybe Drew will run in afterwards and beat down Strowman, something like that. But yeah, my pick's Braun.
We've got Ronda Rousey defend the Women's Championship against Ruby Riott with Charlotte Flair in the front row. What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, the fact that Ruby Riott wasn't allowed to interact with Ronda Rousey on Raw, I think that pretty much answers the question, doesn't it? Yeah, Ronda's winning for sure. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I feel bad for Ruby Riott that she's not been featured as much, but ultimately, you know, I think that the best she can hope for is looking good in defeat.
Yeah, and it was a shame as well for Nikki Cross, who was, you know, used in basically, you know, a jobber role to give Ruby Riott a win before she then loses to Ronda Rousey. That was really quite disappointing to see, but I guess not surprising.
And in the main event is the gauntlet, the Elimination Chamber match for the WWE Championship. Daniel Bryan defending against Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy. Who do you think is walking out with the WWE title?
Daniel Bryan is retaining for sure. What do you think, Kenny?
I think he will retain with the help of Luke Harper joining his group.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, possibly. That would... Yeah, I think that would be quite interesting.
He's now the chicken shit heel, so why not, you know, give him Harper as well?
Why not? It gives Luke Harper a role. I mean, to me, he's a really underrated talent. Hopefully they'll allow him to speak, say more than a few words. I mean, you know, does anyone miss the Bludgeon Brothers? I know you don't, Kenny.
No, I do not. They ruined the SmackDown Tag Team division, so I'm okay with them. So yeah, that's pretty much the chamber, and that's going to be it for us on the main podcast. You did quickly want to mention Pedro Morales, obviously, Finn. He passed away this week. Big star in the WWF and then the WWF in the 80s. Talk to us a little bit about Pedro Morales and what his kind of legacy is to wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, he wrestled in numerous territories, Hawaii, wrestled in California, Texas, Florida, numerous other places, but of course he will always be renowned for his tours with the World Wide Wrestling Federation and later the World Wrestling Federation. He was the man that defeated Ivan Koloff for the WWF title on February 8th of 1971. That was at Madison Square Garden. If you haven't seen that match, I urge you to watch it. The response to it will be like, wow. Wow, people actually responded to wrestling like that back then. I mean, it's just an amazing response. He was champion for nearly 3 years. Dropped the belt to Stan the Man Stasiak on December 1st of 1973. Pedro had been a really good draw in the New York metropolitan area. Hadn't done as well as champion in some other parts of the old Worldwide Wrestling Federation territory, but was, you know, an effective draw. Appealed greatly to Puerto Rican fans who were just like so passionate about Pedro. He was beloved by his fan base. I mean, those fans occasionally would lose their minds when Pedro was wrestling. There was obviously the famous story with Blackjack Mulligan getting stabbed in the leg. There was other various stories of heels being attacked after matches. I think if you were an opponent of Pedro Morales back in the day, you were a heel opponent of him and you were getting heat on him, I would say that was a pretty dangerous position to be in. But I mean, Worldwide Wrestling Federation was the biggest territory and paid really well, so it was worth the risk. And if you'd gone in and had a big program with Pedro, that would set you up for top card programs in other territories as well. So he's not remembered as in the ring as good a performer as Bruno Sammartino, but I thought he was pretty good. He had it was like the traditional of that era punch, kick, slam style with lots of big selling to set up the big comeback. You know, his matches were typified by intense heat, and that's really what carried them. So, I mean, after he dropped the belt in 73, then Bruno became champion again after that. He came back in, I think it was 1980, and actually had another huge run. Firstly, he actually held the tag team title very briefly with Bob Backlund. Then he held the Intercontinental title twice. Had some really good programs with Greg Valentine. There's a really good match on YouTube, which, well, a good match by the standards of the era, which I also recommend you watch. From January 18th, 1982, at Madison Square Garden, Pedro versus Greg Valentine. That's a really good illustration of what he could do and the star that he was. Again, it was sort of basic, sort of that era WWF wrestling, but he did it very well. Psychology of his matches was strong. He knew how to sell. He knew how to time the big comeback. If he was in there with really good heels like Greg Valentine, like Sergeant Slaughter, Magnificent Morocco, he was later Don Morocco. Obviously, he was in an advantageous position because all those three guys were really good workers. But Pedro played his role really well also during that era. So he had actually had two Intercontinental title reigns in the first half of the 1980s and was still massively over. Still continued to wrestle until, I think it was about 80 when he retired. But, I mean, he had Intercontinental title matches with Honky Tonk Man in, like, 87 time. So he was still somebody, even at that late stage of his career, who was pushed as a star. I don't think he's somebody that's really remembered on the set. He's not...
Why did he never... He's one of the only people to never make any appearances in the 90s. He never did shoot interviews. He never did interviews. He never was really around. Why did he just kind of fade away into obscurity?
I don't know. Well, I know in recent years he'd been suffering from Parkinson's disease. But as far as prior to that, as far as him not making appearances and doing all that type of thing, I'm not quite sure why. I mean, maybe he was in a good position financially. Maybe he was a very private person. Maybe he didn't feel like he wanted to expose the business. I mean, not everyone does those. But he was somebody that very much withdrew from the limelight after his career was over. And he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, I believe it was 95. I think that's correct. But we saw him very, very few appearances by him in later years. I imagine he was probably didn't like the direction that the World Wrestling Federation went in during the Attitude Era, because a lot of old-time wrestlers didn't. You know, in particular, Bruno Sammartino, everyone knows that. Maybe it was somebody that just felt like he'd had his time and wanted people to remember him as he was. He's not remembered on the same plateau as like the Luthezies and the Brunos and the Ric Flairs and that kind of level. But he's just below that. Huge star, very, very historically significant figure in the history of this company. First man to hold the three main titles of the 1970s to 1990s era, which was, of course, the WWF title, the tag team title, and the Intercontinental title. So, yeah, I urge you to check out some of his matches. You've just got to go into them with the, you know, historical expectations. But the heat and the selling and the crowd interaction, I mean, he was a really good talent. I mean, you can't say he was like a Harley Race or a Jack Briscoe or a Dory Funk Jr. in terms of technical expertise, but in terms of actually working a style that was tailor-made for that era in that territory, he was pretty damn good.
So with that said, that's pretty much it for us this week. Finn, what are the plugs? What you want to plug this week? Is it your DIY skills at Wrestle Talk Magazine? Is it your ebooks? Plug away, sir.
Well, just like people to check out the issue 8 of Wrestle Talk Magazine is available. So I hope you'll check that out. You've got the information in front of you there, Kenny, haven't you? The website.
You can go to wrestletalk.bigcartel.com, where you can either buy one issue in print or in e-format, or you can buy a subscription. So head over there and check out the musings of Finn Martin and co.
Yeah, lots of us contribute to that magazine. I think I contributed 6 pages to this particular issue, so you know, hope you'll help us keep print wrestling print media alive by purchasing the magazine. And if you want to check out in my books, you can find all the details at my website, which is BradleyMartin.co.uk. What are you plugging this week, Kenny?
I am plugging Gold Dust tickets, insidetheropes.co.uk/Gold Dust, to come see him in Birmingham, Manchester, Glasgow, Belfast, or London in March. Undertaker is sold out. We do have other things in the works, but we kind of need to wait to see Brexit and how that works out before we make any decisions. All of our main podcasts are now on Spotify, so you can get them on Spotify. I know a lot of people have been asking about that, so it now means if you're in the house, you can stick on Spotify on your TV or your tablet or your whatever, and you can listen to us while you do your housework. You can also get us on Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you get bonus content, including this podcast 24 hours early, an overrun, articles by Finn, retro pay-per-view reviews, and much, much more. Please do go and support us there, because that's what allows us to be able to do these podcasts and take the time out to do them for your listening pleasure. So we hope that you've enjoyed your week and enjoy your weekend, enjoy Elimination Chamber, and we will be back next week with more. So Finn, I look forward to talking to you next week.
Likewise, Kenny. Look forward to reviewing Elimination Chamber and all the other developments of the week. So we will see you next week.
See you later, everybody.
If I said tonight